Welcome to the Spa Girls Podcast, a self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. And welcome to another episode.
Hey.
This week we have the delightful Stephanie Holmes on with us. We just had Stephanie not too long ago, but we dragged her back on the show because we talked a little bit afterwards about her Kickstarter, and we thought, wow, we have to talk to you about that. Is that right, Steph? Is that how it happened?
Pretty much how it happened.
You could say she was dragged kicking and screaming.
Oh,
how many kicking puns can we get into one?
I'm sure we're going to come up with a few.
Oh my god. Okay. I'm not very good with puns off the cuff. So you guys
are in charge.
That's
okay. We're all over that.
You'll be fine. Okay.
I'm on track now.
So instead, we've had Steph on before recently, two previous episodes, so go search for them for her normal bio. What I wanted to kind of do was a quick bio into Kickstarter and Steph's project in Kickstarter. So if you don't know, Steph's going to explain what it is when we get to it, but I just wanted to talk about, so in March 2022, which is much earlier this year, Brandon Sanderson did a Kickstarter that kind of blew everyone away. It was a Kickstarter for four secret novels that he'd written during the lockdowns and everything. And those novels went on to earn $20 million in the first 72 hours. And they became the most funded Kickstarter of all time. And they ended up at the end of their period, $41.7 million funded. To say that he inspired a raft of authors into doing their own Kickstarters would be kind of an understatement. There's lots of things going on with that one. He has like a staff of 30 people and he does, you know, all that kind of things. But there's a lot of indie authors coming in after that and going, well, actually, I'm going to get me a piece of that. So, and Stephanie Holmes was one of those awesome authors who decided to do that. So Steph did a Kickstarter for her Nevermore bookshop series to get hardcover copies to her fan base. In the end, she had 180 backers and she made $54,519 New Zealand dollars. Did I say that right? 54,000? Yeah. So well done, Steph. Awesome. So we wanted to talk to you a little bit about it and how you did it and what Kickstarter is. But let's start right at the very beginning. So what on earth is Kickstarter?
Okay. So basically, Kickstarter is what they call a crowdfunding platform. So you kind of think about it as like if you were a big company and you had a project or a product that you wanted to get off the ground, what you would do is you would go out to investors and you would say, hey, I've got this really great idea. Give me lots of money and that will help me get this, that will give me the money I need to get this product out, and then you'll get some cool stuff in return, which is normally money. What crowdfunding is crowdfunding says, okay, well, if you are, like, let's say you're not a like multi-million dollar company, and you are not going to be able to interest big investors in your great idea, but maybe you've got a great idea for a board game or a kind of technology product or a book, and you think that you could get a few small investors to invest a little bit, and in return they get something really cool. And that's basically what crowdfunding is. So what Kickstarter is, probably the oldest and the largest and the most well-known crowdfunding platform, and it enables small creators, which are largely kind of creative people, so books, games, movies, musicians, all those kind of people, to set up a project and say, okay, I need this much money to get this project off the ground. You back me for some portion of that money, and in return, when I get the project off the ground, you're going to get some cool stuff. So maybe if you back a project at $5, what you get for that $5 is you get to see the project actually come together, and maybe you get like a small digital reward. And if you back the project at $200, you might get the physical thing, whatever that is, like the board game or the you know, the whatever, delivered to you, and you also get to see the whole project come together, and maybe you also get other cool things like they put your name in the dedication or kind of things like that. So that's basically how crowdfunding works. Mm-hmm. And so Kickstarter has a few things that are kind of unique to it, and one of those is that you set an amount that you need in order to make your project happen. So you say, so for example, I said I need 10,000 New Zealand dollars, which is probably about about 7,000 US dollars. I need 10,000 New Zealand dollars to make this project happen. And you've got to set a time frame. So I had a time frame of, I think it was 40 days. So in 40 days, I have to get backers to back $10,000, or Kickstarter will not fund my project. The project won't be funded at all. It's all or nothing. So if I had people backing $9,990, Kickstarter would not deduct their credit cards, and the whole thing wouldn't happen. So I've got to get that amount in that amount of time.
It's like right or die or something.
No money changes hands comes out of your account till it's actually a go.
Yep, no money changes. So if you back a Kickstarter, you're basically making a promise that if this project completely funds, you're going to pay the money. And so you click a button and you say, yes, I'm going to back it this level for these rewards. And then at the end of the project, if it's completely funded, Kickstarter will charge everyone's credit card. So your credit card doesn't get charged until the end of the project. And then they collect all the money, they take a small fee, and then they give me the money so that I can make the cool thing happen.
That's awesome. And I think that sets up kind of like a little bit of, if someone likes your project and they've funded it and they've backed it, and they're worried it's not going to fund, they'll go out there and kind of word of mouth and try and get more funders for your project. Is that kind of
something? Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of a kind of ball rolling thing about it. So some of the wisdom around these are that the quicker that you fully fund, the better it is, which is one of the points I have that. So I actually needed, when I set my budget, I actually needed a bit more than $10,000 to, I really needed $15,000 to break even. When I'd done my maths, I thought, okay, 15,000 is really what I need. But I was really, I went back and forth the whole week before I launched, 15,000, or do I go a little bit lower? Just so that I didn't know if I would back, and I thought, I want this to happen. I don't want it to not happen. So even if I lose a little bit of money, I want it to happen. So I went back and forth and back and forth, and finally I settled on 10,000, and it was 100% the right decision because the thing fully funded in 5 hours.
Wow.
And that meant that it meant a couple of things. It meant that anytime someone landed on the Kickstarter page after that 5 hours, they saw that the project was definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was the first thing. So it kind of cut out that question in their heads.
They weren't wasting their time.
So that was the first thing. And the second thing is that if Kickstarter sees that your project looks like it's going to be quite successful, they will give you a bunch of extra advertising and promotion. And you guys have often talked about things like this, like Patreon and things like that, where it's a site where you have to send your fans to it. You don't get a lot of, you know, people aren't on Patreon, for example, searching for projects to back. They go there to back projects from people they're fans of, and that's it. So you don't get any benefit from being kind of searchable on the site. Kickstarter is different. People literally hang out on Kickstarter looking for cool stuff to back. Wow. It happens less in the book field than other fields. A lot of the really successful projects on Kickstarter tend to be tech projects or game projects, whether that's like board games or it's computer games. So those are the kind of people that are literally hanging out on Kickstarter going, that looks cool, I want to see that happen. That looks cool, I want to see that happen. So if you get extra exposure in their kind of discovery pages and their search and things like that, you will end up with more backers. And also you end up with people who actually, you know, have become fans of yours through Kickstarter, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And that's something I sort of didn't really expect, but it totally happens and it's awesome.
Ah, that's so cool.
Very, very cool.
So I've accidentally gotten us a bit further ahead than I meant us to go.
Sorry, I did.
No, that was my fault. I asked the question. So let's step back a bit and go. Where do you go? Like, how does it work? What do you have to kind of do to set up a Kickstarter before you kind of, like, where do you,
So what you need is you need a project that you're going to, a cool project that you're going to do. And I think that project needs very clear goals and kind of a very clear vision of what it is. So you're not just going there going, oh, I want some money. You're like, you need a, you do, that would be nice, but you need a super clear project. So some authors use it for, I'm writing a new book. Help me, you know, help me launch this brand new series with the Kickstarter. Generally, because, you know, a lot of us are in KU and there's kind of exclusivity things and just the way indie authors launch books, this is often not the way that sort of genre fiction authors use Kickstarter really successfully. Things like children's picture books often do quite well, or like journals and things like that in that kind of way, like help me launch this cool thing. Another way to do it is some people will do it, for example, help me, I want to make audiobooks of this series. And that's often a really kind of simple way to start with Kickstarter. I need $2,000 to do this audiobook. So, back me and you'll get, if you back me at $10, you'll get a copy of the audiobook when it's made. And if you back me at $50, you'll get a copy of the audiobook when it's made. And maybe you'll also get a hardcover of the book delivered to your house, or I'll name a character after you, or something cool like that. But then you can also do other things. So my Kickstarter was all about, I wanted to give something really cool to my fans of the series, something they couldn't get anywhere else, they could only get from me through the Kickstarter. So I did limited edition, sort of luxe edition, hardcover books, brand new covers, foil on the covers. It's a whole other thing, but I've just announced today that the books are now going to have, they're going to have like a little ribbon bookmark in them, and they're going to have sprayed edges. The edges of the pages are going to be coloured. So it's all very exciting. So, and this is all stuff, you know, if you order these books from Amazon, even if I'll do hardcover sort of ones on Amazon with these covers on them, even if you order those books from Amazon, you're not going to get all these special extra luxe features on them. I also really wanted to do like maps, so kind of hand-drawn maps of the village and the bookshop in the series. So all these kind of cool things that the people who back the Kickstarter could see happen before their eyes. So I think it's important. You have to have a project. You have to have a really clear goal. You know, what am I trying to do with this Kickstarter? Am I trying to, am I trying to do something cool for my fans? Am I trying to reach new fans? Like, am I trying to reach people outside of my genre? Am I trying to establish myself in a different space? All these kind of things. So, thinking really carefully about what your goals are. So that's the first thing. You need a project. The second and sort of third things is you kind of need to the next thing is you need to, I think, go to Kickstarter and maybe back a couple of projects and actually see what it is like as a backer. Because I think that's the, we can talk about how it works all day long, but I think you won't really understand it until you've actually seen it happen. So that's what I would do. I would go to Kickstarter, I'd go to the book section, I'd look for some cool projects that you think are really cool, or if you an author that you're a fan of is doing a Kickstarter, I would back it to hell. and just see how it works. You know, see all the different tiers that you can choose and how the add-ons work and the stretch goals, and yeah, just see it through. So that's the second thing. So figure out how Kickstarter works, and that's how I do it. And then the third thing is you kind of need the infrastructure of your Kickstarter. So that means you need to know how much money you're trying to raise to make your project happen, what's going to be in your project, so the books, the swag, the extras, all the stuff that all needs to be kind of priced out. And you need to know what your reward tiers are. So if someone backs at $5, what's their reward? If they back at $25, what's their reward? If they back at $500, what's their reward? And so it's figuring out the infrastructure. And once you've got that, it's really kind of figuring out when are you going to launch, and you know, how are you going to market it, I think. And then I guess, and then the final thing is you're going to have to fulfill it, which is kind of the you sort of think the hard work's done after the Kickstarter funds and the thing is over, but it's not. The hard work's only just begun, because you actually have to fulfill it and you have to send out all those rewards. So it's that side of things organized as well, I think. Yeah.
And I would think that you would have to think carefully about your rewards before you actually promise certain things, like yes. Did you have any issues around that, or was that something you thought about before? Or
so a lot of the stuff that really interests the fans about these types of Kickstarters, what people have what we've seen, particularly since Sanderson did his, is a lot of authors, and especially in romance and fantasy, and these kind of spaces, doing these Kickstarters for special editions of books that usually already exist. So books that already have a fan base, and they're getting special kind of luxe editions of these books that they couldn't get with new covers that they couldn't get anywhere else. So that's the format that I was using. And with those types of Kickstarters, the fans are really excited about these luxe edition books, but they're also excited about the additional fun things they can get. So merchandise that they can get, swag that they can get, that kind of extends the fandom of the series that they love. And so if you're doing that kind of merch, it definitely does pay to think really carefully about it. So there are a few things to think about. So when I did mine, I have so the series is a reverse harem series. There's a heroine, there's three heroes. So I wanted to do a swag item that related to each person. So that's kind of how I started with mine. And I knew I wanted to have, the way I wanted my rewards to work was that the lowest reward was $5, and that was a digital only reward. So I didn't want to be shipping stuff for those low tier rewards. The next was one book. They could get one book of their choice. The next was three books, so a set of three books. And when I launched the Kickstarter, I was thinking very small, and I was thinking I would only do the first three books in the series. So they could get three books that I was going to do with the Kickstarter. The next reward up from that was three books plus this merch pack, so plus the swag pack. And the swag pack included one swag item for each of the characters, and that's kind of how I decided what was going to go in that pack. Then the next reward up from that was an interesting one. It was, I thought, because I live in New Zealand, the shipping is so expensive, I would give international readers a chance to kind of get in on the Kickstarter without having to pay too much for the shipping. So I thought I'd do a just the swag pack, where they could get only the merchandise and some book plates, which I would sign, and then later they could buy the books, like the cheaper version of the hardbacks, off of Amazon and stick the book plates inside the books. I thought that would sell so much, and I sold two copies, which kind of told me, that really, you know, the readers are really excited about these books, and they're so excited they don't care
Yeah.
And it costs so much to ship them, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. So that was my next tier up. And then my next tier after that was an ultimate fan tier, which was $500. So they could get one book in the swag, three books in the swag, just the swag, and then after that it was an ultimate fan tier, and we could talk a little bit about that later. And the ultimate fan tier included the three books plus the swag. It had no extra swag in it, but it had some other things in it which were like stuff that would take me time to do, but what went, you know, didn't cost me additional amounts to produce or additional amounts for shipping. So we can talk a bit about that later. So that I knew I wanted a really this really simple structure. So for the swag, I wanted these four items. And so I kind of went through the characters and chose things. Basically, I sort of chose things that I thought kind of represented the character. And that's kind of the way I went, rather than thinking, oh, what's the easiest thing to ship?
Mistake then, was it?
Don't be me. Yes, learn from me. So I did some things right, and I made a couple of mistakes. So we did what were some of the things we did? We did a candle that smelt like one of the characters. That was pretty cool. I think I'd possibly keep that. That was not too bad. I did one of the characters is a raven shifter, so we did a necklace which is like a black feather, so like a raven feather necklace, and that was in some ways cool because it was we got all the pieces for the necklace off of like Alibaba or one of those kind of sites and put them together, and so they were very inexpensive to make for. So that was quite good because it gave us kind of a buffer in the budget, but then we had to make them all. So this is still going on. So it's kind of fun, but also, you know, also so that's a time, you know, that's a time thing. So that's worth thinking about. I don't know if I would do that again. The next thing we did was I did enamel pins. For the heroine loves to wear pins and kind of T-shirts with kind of funny slogans about books and reading and stuff. So we did three pins that has been mentioned specifically in the books. So if you read the books, you go, oh, that's the pin that Mina was wearing, and here it is, so that I can wear it too. I'd 100% absolutely, hands down, do pins again. They look so snazzy. They were relatively inexpensive to do. The artist that I worked with, she has a whole process for doing these. So I just, you know, she designed them and then she organized the, you know, with the supplier and everything. So that was amazing. They're relatively small. They're relatively kind of thin and easy to ship. Like I can literally ship them in an envelope if I were just shipping the pins, which is useful to know because I'm, you know, some of these things from the Kickstarter I'm going to be selling later on in an online shop. So pins, yes, definitely. They were also one of the, probably, I think, the most popular kind of added-on swag item. And then the fourth thing I did was a wine glass. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I just shut it a little bit.
So we haven't shipped yet, but I just know. That they're going to, that some of them are going to break. And we have to, you know, we have to spend extra money on extra packaging and stuff like that for them. And it's just, it's an extra hassle and it's stressing me out because I just know that that's what people are going to send back. So don't do that.
We're learning off of, don't do what Steph did on on others.
Yeah.
Are they printed with something? Is that what it is?
They look amazing. They're so cool. They're etched with a phrase. So one of the guys is Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights, and he runs the bookshop, and he's a bit of a drinker. And there's a phrase, I think it's when the main character finds out that the bookshop is kind of magical and it's bringing these fictional characters to life, and I think Heathcliff pours her a drink, and then she just grabs the bottle off of him. And he says, he says, you're going to drink until magic becomes plausible. And she's like, damn right. And so I put on the wine glass, I put, I'm going to drink until magic seems plausible.
Nice.
And it's etched on there. It's stunning. Absolutely beautiful. But yeah, don't do glass wine glasses tea. They're also quite large. Like they're quite, you know, it's like a big square thing. So whatever you ship that in, it's going to have to be kind of that thick. Like, yeah, don't do that.
Where did you resource all of this stuff? Where did you source it all? That's my thing. Like the books. Where did you get the luxury, you know, the limited edition?
Right. So the books is a whole thing. I will just put that aside for the moment.
Yeah.
And we'll just talk about the swag. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things. So first of all, so that was my kind of design that I had. And then I had a couple of things in my head that I would do extra if we hit stretch goals. Mm-hmm. And the first thing was that we would do a map of the book. So the maps weren't originally part of the Kickstarter. And I said, if we hit 15K or 20K, I can't quite remember, I would hire an artist to make some maps for the books, and the map would be printed in all of the books, and it would also be included as an art print for all of the, for anyone who ordered swag. That's a great idea. Do that, because prints are very cheap to do. You just do them as like posters or postcards. They don't expect like super fancy, you know, like really fancy arty paper or anything. Prints are very, very cheap to do. They pack flat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have cardboard envelopes, they don't shatter. So prints are really good, and they're actually really, really popular. Mm. So I've noticed a lot of the other Kickstarters, this is what they do. They do mainly paper swag with maybe pins. And this is what I would do in the future, is I'd probably stick to largely paper swags, so like artwork and prints and stuff. So I did these two maps, and then I did some bonus artwork. I did the same thing. So with the swag, I actually hired a friend who runs a business where she imports into New Zealand like corsetry supplies. And sells them online, which is like a crazy thing. But she does really, really well. And she also makes craft boxes with kind of items that she's sourced from everywhere and puts them together and sends out these craft boxes. And she loves this kind of stuff. She loves sourcing things and putting it in and packing it all up and shipping it out. And I hate that. I like imagining it happening, but I don't like the process of actually doing it and like keeping spreadsheets and stuff like that. I really enthusiastically create the spreadsheet, and then I forget about it, and then it's a mess. Yeah. So I hired her, and I said, I'll give you basically a small percentage of whatever the Kickstarter makes to help me do this. And so she sourced a lot of these items for me. So we actually got the we had a couple of other bonuses because the Kickstarter got so big. So we also did a leather bookmark, which is, again, etched with the bookstore name. And the other thing, and I'd do those again in a heartbeat because they look really smart and they were really cheap. And we also did, what else did we do? Oh, there's a pub in the book that all the characters go to this pub, and it's called the Rose and Wimple. And so I had my designer do a beer coaster. For the pub, and then we got, it was a company that does beer coasters for like pubs and stuff here in New Zealand, so we got them to make the coasters, so they were again really cheap and quite flat and quite light, so I would also do those again. Especially if
there's, idea.
Yeah, especially if there's like a pub or, you know, a restaurant or something in your series, because they're just oh my god, it's the actual thing, like So I also did those. So the bookmarks and the wine glasses actually came from a company that makes wedding favors. And they actually came from here in New Zealand, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah, yeah, the again, the coaster company that was it's just a printing company that prints a lot of like beer coasters for pubs and stuff. So they were very, we had to order, you know, all these things have kind of often have kind of minimums. And I think it was about 100 minimum. And I think I'm sending out 70 swag packs. So I have a few left over, which I'm gonna just put in my online shop. Or you can use them for giveaways and stuff.
So the planning was massive, right? I mean, you must have taken you months to plan all this.
Yeah, yes. So we do we did definitely start early. And a lot of the stuff was like planned but not ordered or anything like that. Because you don't know, you've no idea what kind of numbers you're gonna need. So that was the coasters, the candles are made by like a local candle maker. I possibly wouldn't do those again because they're quite like they're quite expensive. And the pins were done by the artist who did a lot of the like a lot of the kind of merch for the project. So I had the artist lined up, you know, well before we did we started Kickstarter.
Steph, can I just ask you where you drew the line or where you extended the line for your stretch goals to fit in the swag? So you were talking that like right at the beginning it was 10k and they got all these things, and then you moved up to the next lot with the pins and all that sort of thing. I think that was about, was that about 15k you went to that level?
Yeah, I think so. I think I basically had a stretch goal at every 5k in New Zealand.
Right, cool.
And it was a bit of a problem because I had planned in my head up to sort of 20 to 25K of stretch goals. And I thought that was as far as the Kickstarter was going. I thought, I think 25K I said I was going to make book four. And I thought that was as far as the whole thing was going to go. Maybe it was 30 I was going to make book four. I can't even remember. But I thought there was no way we're going to get there. So I had no idea what was going to happen after that. Like I had ideas. But I didn't know, and that meant that that stretch goals were a little bit messy.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a mix of stretch goals where it's a thing that people can add on. So what I had was I had, as the project kept moving, I kept basically I had some extra swag ideas. But the backers were telling me what we want is we want the rest of the series. And the series is 9 books long. We want the rest of the series in these fancy books. And so I was scrambling to budget how the hell we're going to do this. But what would happen is I put a stretch goal up and say, okay, at 30K, we're going to do book 4. And then what happens is you get to 30K and you're like, yay, we're going to do book 4. And then you add a thing called an add-on, where you say, okay, if you want book 4 added onto your pledge, you just click this button and you pay this extra, you know, you add this extra amount to your pledge and you'll get book 4 as well. So what happens is everyone goes and does that. And then before you know it, you're at 35K and you have to come up with another stretch goal. So if you're doing so if you're doing
good problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're doing stretch goals where people are adding money, doing add-ons, it's a good way to kind of move the momentum along of the Kickstarter, because with a Kickstarter you're going to make them vast majority of your money in the first 3 days and the last 3 days, and the middle is going to be this plateau. And so if you can find ways to kind of push that a little bit every single day in the middle, it's going to help you a lot with that plateau. And this is one way to do it, is to have things that they can add on. But you also don't want every single stretch goal to be an add-on, because it can be a little bit overwhelming and a little bit, it can feel a little bit not quite right, especially for those backers who are backing quite low amounts. So it's good to mix stretch goals which are add-ons with stretch goals that kind of amp up the stuff you're already doing, and that can be stuff for books. It's kind of quite cool. So my big stretch goal like that was adding the maps. So I added maps. One of my stretch goals was adding end papers to the books. So the publisher said they could do like an illustrated end paper. So I had the designer do this like fun. They took some of the elements of the covers and just dotted them all around as end papers, and that doesn't cost me anything extra. It cost me a smidge extra, but it it doesn't cost them anything extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just it goes, oh, if we hit, you know, 40K, then my books get even better. Yeah. So it's a kind of cool thing to encourage them to share the project. You can also do with Luxe Editions, you can do things like you could start with a plain hardcover and you could say, if we hit this goal, I'm going to do foil on the cover, mm-hmm. or I'm going to do sprayed edges, or they're going to get a little bookmark. Maps are really good. Just like increasing the internal formatting, mm-hmm. like fancier chapter headings, stuff like that. That's really great ideas for that. I definitely think to think really carefully about your stretch goals, and you can be a little bit ambitious because it can go a lot better than you thought. Mm-hmm. And I ended up adding, so I started with 3 books and I thought maybe I'll do 4 books, and I ended up doing 7 books, the first 6 books in the series plus a novella. Wow. And really for a Kickstarter, which is a small, like I'm quite a small author, you know, this Kickstarter only has 180 backers, so it's not that many people. If you're a smaller author, you have to do a smaller print run, mm-hmm. and like often it costs you the same amount of money to print 500 books as it does to print 100 or 200. Mm. So you're really wanting to try to get more, you know, to be able to print more books of one book rather than lots of books, but they're all different books. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So that's one big thing. I think in the future, I perhaps wouldn't choose a series. Like I chose the series specifically because it's a fan favorite. It's one that fans message me about all the time. Mm-hmm. But possibly when I do another Kickstarter, I will choose a series based primarily on how much does it sell, and see if that makes a difference. And also a series where the actual series is finished, mm-hmm. in 3 or 4 books. So I don't feel like I should keep adding books.
Yeah.
So that's a whole. That's a whole thing. And I guess we can talk about the books.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, right from the start, though, you must have had to know yourself how much these special editions were going to cost for you to produce.
You need to drink on that one.
Yeah.
I need something a bit stiffer than water, actually. So, yes is the answer. This is probably the first, if you're doing special edition books, the first thing you're going to need to know is how much are those books going to cost? What can I get for that cost? And, you know, the cost breaks. So most publishers will have, you know, if you order 100 books, it's going to cost this much per unit. If you order 200, it's going to be slightly less per unit, 300, 400, 500, 1,000, et cetera. So that will help you budget and know, and I think you'll know roughly, are you in the 100 author bracket or the 500 author, you know, 500 book author bracket. I think you'll roughly have some idea. I went to a New Zealand publisher and I said, this is what I'm trying to do. And they gave me some different quotes. And we agreed on a quote, which was a hardcover book with a cheaper binding. Mm-hmm. And it came down at a price where I could make this project feasible. If I was doing, I think it was 100. If I was doing 200 copies of each book, it became feasible. But I, you know, had intended to have a few extras to like sell on the website or at events and stuff. Mm-hmm. So if I was doing about 200 books, it became kind of a reasonable number. I guess the first thing to realize here is that more people are going to order book one than they're going to order later books in the series, especially if the series is quite long. So this was a problem that we came up with when I started adding extra books on, was basically that we had to increase the price of the books because we know we might only print 50 of those books, mm-hmm. and the price of the book is going to be quite high. But then it makes it all confusing because you've got these add-ons where it says add on one book, but some people will add on one book at the book one price, but they want book 6, and so it gets really confusing. So that was really confusing. That is not the main problem. So,
well, there's more, but wait, there's more.
So I did the project, the whole thing was super successful based on this quote that this publisher had given me. I get my designer to do all the covers and finish all the formatting and everything. I send the files off to the publisher and I'm ready to rock and I'm so excited. And they come back to me and they tell me that the quote that I based the whole thing off of is actually a quote for soft cover books. And a hardcover book is approximately 3 times the price.
Oh, Steve.
No. So
feeling your pain right now.
So this happened a couple of weeks ago. And I had a heart attack because that's me shot. That's more money than the Kickstarter made just to print the books. Yeah. And yes. I'd already spent the money on, I've already ordered all the merch and everything is all done. And it's not even including shipping. So I have a heart attack and then I go, okay, well, that's happened. So we're going to try and fix this. So I contact every single person, every single friend, author friend I know who's ever done hardcovers before. And I say, help, who's your publisher? It quickly becomes apparent that I can't print the books in New Zealand. So basically I've got 2 options at this point. I can either tell the backers that they're going to get soft cover books instead of hardcovers, or I can find another publisher. Yeah. And I decide that my first port of call is to try and find another publisher because I don't want to tell the backers that they're not getting hardcovers. So it quickly becomes apparent I can't print the hardcovers in New Zealand. I can't put them in the US, and a lot of US-based authors will be using US-based publishers. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that a lovely woman named Michelle, who actually published I've actually done a Kickstarter previously for a children's picture book, and Michelle picked up, it was originally going to be self-published, but Michelle was interested in the book because the Kickstarter had done pretty well for a children's picture book. And so she actually picked it up with her sort of small press publishing company and did a lovely hardcover edition of it. And we met in person for the first time at the Romance Writers of New Zealand conference this year. And we were talking about the Kickstarter and stuff. And I said, oh, I got this published, a nice publisher in New Zealand to do it. And she says, oh, well, you know, if you're ever thinking about going overseas, then, you know, talk to me because I've got my publisher in China who are amazing. And you know, the quality is really good. And I'm like, yeah, I totally do because they're amazing. And I contact her and I say, so.
How that conversation?
Yeah, so about that. You know, that conversation. And so she gets me a quote from her publisher in China, and it's amazing. And it means that I can, not only can I print all the books in hardcover with foil, all fancy pants, I could do all 7 of them. It means I can order even more extra copies for the same price that I was going to pay here in New Zealand. I can order even more extra copies, so I've got a stash to sell on my website or at events. It also means, and I've just told my backers this morning, it means that I can actually upgrade the books. They're going to get a little ribbon bookmark in them, and the edges of the books are going to be gilded, and which is something the New Zealand publisher couldn't do. And I wanted right from the beginning, but so I've been able to tell the backers this morning, because the main thing about this is that it means that I'd said to people, we're really hoping to get you all your stuff by Christmas, and it's probably not going to happen now. This close to Christmas, and books have to be shipped here from China and then back again. It's not going to happen. So to soften the blow that the books are going to be late for the backers, I've been able to say they're going to be late, but they're getting upgraded. And so the book disaster has turned into the best thing that could have possibly happened to the Kickstarter. So it kind of shows you that, like, yeah, you can fix anything. just gotta hang on and keep the faith. But it was amazing. Yeah. It turned out
I'm so glad it turned out for you.
Oh, me too.
So when are they your backers?
Doing, yeah, absolutely. So just to clarify from a backer's point of view, their money's kind of gone out of their account at this point and it's gone into your account. If you couldn't deliver, what would happen, Steph, like at that point?
They would get very angry. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen where Kickstarter projects don't get, you know, the backer takes the money and the project falls over or the business goes bankrupt or things happen and basically they take the money and don't get the stuff. I have backed, I think, nearly 70 projects on Kickstarter.
Wow.
And I've had one where the whole thing fell over and they refunded money.
Mm-hmm.
One where they sent half of the stuff that was in the package and I think they're sort of still working with a manufacturer to make the second half, and this has been about 4 years. And so that's – and, yeah, so I don't expect that to happen. And all of the rest of them have happened. So it's very much a trust thing.
Yeah.
There's not really much recourse for backers if a project doesn't get funded. Yeah. So there's a bit of a risk involved. In some instances you could get the money back through PayPal and things.
Yep.
There's not much recourse if a project doesn't happen. That's a risk that your backers take. So I think that you as the person making the Kickstarter, you have to take that really, really seriously. Absolutely. which is part of why I really didn't want to go to them and say, "Oh, the books are going to be soft cover now."
Yeah.
I probably would have taken the financial hit rather than do that. But I'm so lucky that now I don't have to.
And plus those people now know that you're true to your word and they might be willing to do so again, back you again.
A lot of people, they back Kickstarters not just because they want the cool stuff, but they also really like getting this like behind the scenes look at what goes on, putting together this project. They love seeing pictures of like all the boxes arriving and like videos of you like packing up the stuff, and they love they love hearing about it. They love seeing progress pictures of the artwork being done and stuff like that as well. And I know this because I back a lot of Kickstarters, so I send out a lot of updates, basically. So I think it's really good to be really open with them when you have an issue. And the issues are going to happen. You know, stuff's going to be late. You know, an artist is going to fall through, and you have to get someone else, or you know, you may have to change a supplier of a merch item or something like that. Yeah. But you just be honest, and they're your fans. Like they. You know, as long as you're not ripping them off, they understand.
Mm. And just so, just from a logistic point of view, you can contact them directly. The backers, you have a list, do you, or how do you do it?
So there's the back end of Kickstarter. There's a couple of different ways. There's like an updates feature of Kickstarter, which is what I normally use, where it kind of just sends out. It's like a blog post that basically, you know, you kind of write them like a blog post, but it gets emailed out to every backer.
Mm-hmm.
And because Kickstarter is Kickstarter, they do tend to land in the inbox instead of the like spam or promotions folder. Mm-hmm. So they're much more likely to be seen. Backers can also comment on those posts, and they're pretty good about doing that, which is quite cool. You can also message an individual backer within Kickstarter and they can message you back as like a private message.
Mm-hmm.
And provided the backer has provided their email address, I also have their email addresses as well as their physical addresses for shipping purposes. So you can contact people that way. Sometimes, you know, like credit cards get declined and, you know, stuff like that. And so, so it's good to have a way to contact them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to ask that question, but I was also going to say, do you feel like it's a certain type of person who goes onto a platform like Kickstarter? Like I kind of, like you were talking before about how people are pretty cool about, they want to see behind the scenes, but they're also kind of cool about, you know, maybe changes and stuff. And I wondered whether there's a sort of this kind of type of person who's sort of futuristic, like those kind of people who always go out and buy the latest technology because they want to be the first, the innovators, or the
yeah so yes. So basically, yes. So I think there is definitely an audience on Kickstarter, which I think is why before Sanderson, I think there's why there's this BS and AS, like before Sanderson and after Sanderson. So before Sanderson, if you looked at the projects in publishing, so publishing is not the biggest kind of space on Kickstarter. Like I said, that's really games. I think games and tech stuff is the biggest space on Kickstarter. If you looked at the publishing projects that have been the most successful, they tend to be children's picture books, often nonfiction or sort of about kind of topical things. The biggest Kickstarter publishing project was that Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, which is a big published book with that profiles kind of 100 like famous women in history for girls kind of age like 6 to 9, I think.
We have that.
Yeah, so a lot of people have that. So that was the biggest prior to Sanderson. I believe that one was the biggest publishing project on Kickstarter. And that kind of gives you an idea. The reason those kind of projects like children's stuff is really popular is because people go, oh, that's a great gift for this person in their life, or that's a great thing for my daughter. So I think before Sanderson, a lot of the books were being purchased on Kickstarter because they were quite topical. They're often quite geeky. And it was sort of bought as gifts for other people, I think, or, rather than for your own consumption. There weren't that many fiction projects that were quite big. Other books that were quite popular were like journals, planners, sort of those kind of projects, which appeal to that sort of techie, you know, appeal to that similar kind of audience. So those kind of projects were quite big. And what I think Sanderson did is introduced Kickstarter and made it more mainstream for fiction readers who weren't previously familiar with it. Like if you've backed Sanderson's Kickstarter, you're more likely to then go and back a Kickstarter of a smaller author who you also like, because now you know how Kickstarter works. So I think that is a big part of why these newer... So I think if I'd run this campaign 2 or 3 years ago, I don't think it would have done as well. It's basically what I'm trying to say. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, a lot of my readers who backed the Kickstarter were new to Kickstarter. They'd never backed one before, you know, because they ask a lot of questions about it. The other factor, I think, is good old TikTok. And I'm not saying there's like a direct sort of line from TikTok to Kickstarter, but I am saying that the audience on TikTok, in particular BookTok, which is where a lot of, in particular, romance authors are getting their, you know, it's a big source of new readers at the moment. Those are often younger. They're often quite tech savvy. They read a lot in paperback and hardback, and they really like luxe special editions that are super special when no one else has them, and you know that they like that kind of stuff. And so I think more authors are producing content and kind of becoming publishers to produce those kind of books for those kind of readers because they see there's a demand for it. So more and more authors are going, okay, well, there's a demand for super luxe editions, so I'm going to do super luxe editions. And we're realizing that we have the audience size that we can do a print run of books like that and it can actually be profitable. Whereas I don't think we always sort of said, okay, well, publishers do print. And what we're really good at as self-publishers is ebooks. And I think that's not necessarily the case anymore. So I think that's one thing. And I think also it's simply that it's kind of the same thing. I think it's that TikTok readership has kind of shown us as authors that we can do this. You know, we can do this kind of print, these kind of luxe print editions, and there is an audience out there. So I think authors that might, a couple of years ago, not have considered Kickstarter because I don't think it's as effective for our audiences for, say, funding the publication of a brand new ebook, because I just don't think the readerships are quite the same. They wouldn't have considered it. They're now considering it because there's this new way of doing it. We say, okay, well, it's going to be this one-off, this limited edition thing. We're going to do brand new everything. It's going to be great. I think those factors all kind of come together.
It makes total sense. It's basically turning that working, aiming for that visual medium, isn't it? It's delivering something, because that's what the book talkers are so into, is, like you say, not just the uniqueness, but sort of having the displays and all the aesthetic of books.
Exactly.
Isn't it funny how the wheel turns? that's sort of going back. Yeah.
The same with my husband and his records, right? Like, for a while there were no records, and suddenly
now they're all back again.
Yeah.
Yes.
CDs.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing information, Steph. Thank you.
Yeah.
And congratulations to you. That was an emotional roller coaster just listening to it. I can only imagine living it would have been pretty awesome as well.
I might have missed this, but I want to know what marketing you did. Like, how did you actually get it out to people to tell them about the Kickstarter? Like, was it just your newsletter list, or where did you go?
Right. So I, as I sort of said, I decided very early on that the goal of the Kickstarter was to give something really big to my fans. So I didn't focus on outside my fandom.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do, there's a couple of big things. I had a pre-launch, which I thoroughly recommend, which is where you can kind of set up a bit of the back end of the Kickstarter and you pre-launch it. So you have a link, and if the readers click on that link, it just takes them to a simple page on the Kickstarter platform that has a picture, which you can decide what it is. It has like a 50 word or 25 word description, a very short description, and it just has a button that says follow this project or something like that. So basically, if you click that button as a follower, you'll get an email alert the moment the Kickstarter goes live.
Nice.
And that's how I sold my ultimate fan package in like 10 seconds.
Wow.
My goal was to pre-launch with 100 people, and I got like 112 people on that pre-launch. The more people you have on that pre-launch, the better the campaign's obviously going to do in the first little while. So I was telling my newsletter and telling Facebook, giving them little peeks at the books and stuff like that. Not everything, but giving them and the swag, but giving them little peeks and stuff before the Kickstarter launch to try and get as many of them interested as possible, especially because I knew there was going to be this element of like having to sell them on actually using Kickstarter. So I would definitely do a pre-launch. I wanted to pre-launch for a month, but the other big thing that happened to me was that this camera crew, there's this cool little program in New Zealand called Attitude, which is all about people with disabilities doing cool stuff. And they called me and said, we would love to do a program about you and your books. But the thing is that writing is really boring to like film.
Cheers, buddy, for that one.
We sort of both agreed on that together. So they were sort of like, do you have any interesting projects that are kind of coming up that sort of focus the Kickstarter, the program around? And I said, well, I'm doing this Kickstarter. And they were like, oh, that's perfect. So they said, well, we will do this half-hour program on national TV in New Zealand. It'll be available for everyone to see all around the world about your Kickstarter, and we'll launch it when your Kickstarter launches, so that people can then click directly through to the Kickstarter. That is too good a piece of piece of media to kind of turn down. So basically I said hell yes, and we did that, and the camera crew came out to my house and hung out for 4 days, and it was crazy, but they did that and they filmed the thing, and I had timed the whole Kickstarter around when they were going to launch it, and then they basically told me they were going to launch it, that I'd been moved up the schedule and it was going to launch about 2 weeks early.
Oh no.
So I had to launch the Kickstarter 2 weeks early, so I wasn't quite as done as I had hoped to be. But you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So that was a big piece of media that I had. Kickstarter also has a thing where you can get a specific link with a little bit of code at the end for each different advertising thing that you do. So you can see, okay, well, you can have your Facebook link and your newsletter link and your link that you give to the media and your link that you give to this person or whatever. And so you can actually see where people come from.
Oh, very nice.
It's really useful. I used it on my first Kickstarter and it was super useful, and I completely forgot to use it on this one. And I realized like 4 days in or something. So annoyingly, I can't even say what was really the most useful thing. I pre-launched. I would send to my newsletter about every sort of 3 days. I was pretty relentless about it. And I was, you've always got news because I was like, oh, we've, funded in 3 hours. Oh, here's a new stretch goal. Oh, we're nearly at the new stretch goal. Oh, we've reached the new stretch goal. What's the new stretch goal? So I always had news for them. So I was emailing them a lot. I tried to post on Facebook once a day. It feels difficult because it feels like you're spamming people, but basically I noticed this in my first Kickstarter that basically every time I posted on Facebook I seemed to get a new person. So I found the same thing this time. So I posted on Facebook every single day. I had a few nice author friends who shared it in their Facebook groups. I don't know really how effective that was, but I did it. I went through the book section on Kickstarter and backed at the smallest level, like $5 level, whatever, every single urban fantasy, paranormal romance Kickstarter that was going on at the time that had a decent sort of like a decent looking product and a decent sized audience. And that was about five or six of them. And so I backed them and then I messaged them and said, hey, I'm doing a Kickstarter at the same time. Our audiences are similar. I'll share mine with my audience. If you share yours with, I'll share yours, you share mine. And that worked quite well. I also had a friend at the time who was doing a big Kickstarter. It was the Peculiar Tastes one that the Bonkers Romance podcast did. And so I'm friends with them and I messaged them and said, hey, I don't know, would you possibly consider sending my Kickstarter out to your audience? And I had sent theirs out to my audience that same day. So I said, look, I've done it for you. And they said yes. And that alone netted me about $3,000 in new backers.
Cool.
But it was a big campaign. Theirs was about, I think they got about like 800K New Zealand or something.
Wow.
As an awesome project. So that was really all I did. But I did that every day for 42 days. Last time when I did the children's picture book, the goal was different. I was trying to get people who buy picture books, which is not necessarily my audience, to buy the thing. So I did a lot of like media and things like that. So I had a completely different plan because the goal was completely different. But yeah, that's what I did. That's basically what I did this time.
That's awesome.
Amazing. It obviously worked incredibly well, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Can we now go back and look at that, like your campaign and the other one that you've, or are they gone now?
No, you can go back.
Yeah.
You can still see them on Kickstarter. And there's actually a link on my, I just put it up today because I just forget how to do it. There's actually a link on my current Kickstarter page. If you missed out on the books, you can actually order the books from like a pre-order shop. So hopefully that's quite useful.
Mm-hmm. We will be going and looking at that ASAP.
Yes. Check it all out.
Absolutely. But I think going right back to one of your first pieces of advice, which is to become a backer, I think nothing teaches you how the system works, particularly from a backer point of view, is actually being one. It's really hard to get it, even just looking through it, through the site I'm talking about, just in general.
Yeah. Agree. Awesome. Amazing. You're very inspirational.
So, yeah. Steph, so are you doing it again? Did I hear you say that you're going for another round?
Yeah, so I plan on doing another one next year. Uh-huh. I won't 100% say it's definitely going to happen because I'm going to start a Patreon in a couple of months, and it may just be that fills this need that this space that I have for doing these kind of things. Mm-hmm. I personally wouldn't do more than one a year. Because I think it's quite, my thought is run it roughly in the middle of the year. And so you've got the beginning of the year to do all the exciting planning, you run the campaign, then you've got the rest of the year to figure out how the hell you're going to fulfill it.
Yeah.
And recover.
And I would run it a bit early. I'd possibly run it a bit earlier in the year than I ran this one. And I now know a lot of stuff. So, and I've now got this publisher, so I would just go back to the same publisher. There's a few things like I waited until the end of the Kickstarter to get the guy to draw the maps, but it took him 6 weeks. They're amazing, but it took him 6 weeks to draw the maps, and I couldn't get a final file to the publisher until these maps were done. Mm-hmm. And so I would have known about this whole publishing issue 2 months probably beforehand if I had had him, if I had actually paid in advance for him, if I'd done the maps more in advance. Yeah. So I know that kind of stuff. I would scale back my swag a bit, no glasses,
But you always learn, don't you? You're learning, it's stuff that you will take into whatever you do next, whether it's through Patreon or through Kickstarter. You take that learning through.
Yeah. Exactly. And it was a bit of work, but it's so much fun, and it's actually the stuff I love. Like, I've loved making, like, designing the swag and working with the artists and stuff like that. And I don't love the logistics of it, but I've got a friend who's doing that for me, so I don't even have to think about that. So it's just, it's worked out really well. Obviously I made, but basically by the time people have added on extra add-ons and stuff, I've made about 60 grand New Zealand off of it. Obviously not all of that is profit. No. But a lot of the stuff I've got, like, I end up with about 200 extra books, like extra copies of book one. And I've got a lot of the swag. I've ordered extras of it all so that I can sell it in an online store and give it to my Patreons and stuff like that. So, you can get a lot of long-term use out of some of the things that if you're quite clever about it.
Yeah, And, I mean, the thing is, you could take that map and do all kinds of things with that, put that on tote bags or, whatever. But,
Very cool.
Kudos nice to work. You, Steph. Well kudos done. To you.
Impressive, man.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So have we got any more questions, or are we good to go? So, Steph, if someone wants to find out more about you or the Kickstarter or anything like that, where's the best place to find you?
Well, I mean, if you want to find out more about my books, I am on I'm just www.stephanieholmes.com, Stephanie with two Fs. And if you want to find out more about Kickstarter or any of my other kind of self-publishing projects or stuff like that, I have a wee little podcast. It's not nearly as cool as this one, called Rage Against the Manuscript. And so I've got a podcast. I've got a few little kind of self-publishing courses. I do a bit of I do mentoring for people who are doing self-publishing, which is super fun. And you can find out about all of that at www.rageagainstthemanuscript.com.
Nice.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Thank you
You're
so much.
You're a busy lady, and I'm very glad.
I don't know how you get it all done.
I don't know.
And where can we be found, Sha?
So we can be found at spargirlspodcast.com. We can be found on Patreon at spargirlspodcast, and we can be found on socials at spargirlspodcast. So,
awesome.
Find us there.
Awesome.
Find us all in all the places. But thank you all for listening to another episode of the Spa Girls podcast. We really loved having you here with us. And thank you, Steph, for joining
us. Thank you, Steph.
Awesome, Steph. Thank you.
For another week. And that's us. That's us done. But we'll see you again next time, next week. And for now, farewell.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.